Every wise woman builds her house. Now that means what Proverbs 31 says. Her children are respected and well clad, and her house is well organized and neat. She has charity. Every wise woman builds her house, but the foolish plucks it down with her hands. Lazy, or she's the opposite of Proverbs 31. When you read one of those verses like that, then you think the opposite of Proverbs 31, that's who it's talking about here. Someone that doesn't rise early and doesn't work willingly with her hands and doesn't consider feeling by it. If a woman, instead of being virtuous, is foolish, then she puts down her own house with her own hands. If she's wise, it'll be established and stable. He that walks in his uprightness fears the eternal. But he that is perverse in his ways despises them. So if you fear God, you walk in all of God's ways and upright. But the other way, you get perverted and angry at God. You know, there's one scripture that says the wicked goes his own way, and then when the result of it comes back on him, he blames God and curses God for it. Now, silly, you know. He that is perverse in his ways despises the God that tells you what to do. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them. Big mouth, big talker, know-it-all, the mouth of the foolish. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean. But much increase is by the strength of the ox. So in order to have oxen, you're going to have fodder and a stall and uncleanness. So sure, you might keep something spick and span and clean where there isn't any oxen, but you don't have any animal to work with to produce anything either. So the strength of the ox. Now notice God's characteristic of the ox, the strength. A faithful witness won't lie, but a false witness will utter lies. A scorner seeks wisdom and doesn't find it. So by his very nature, he wouldn't be able to find it if he's scornful or thinks he knows it all and nobody else knows anything. And knowledge is easy to him that understands. But once you begin to get that attitude of scorn, then you can even seek wisdom and not be able to find it. Though from the presence of the foolish man, when you perceive not in him the lips of knowledge, so you can tell right away by what they talk about and how they talk about it, and what their minds are on, and flee, get out of there. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way. But how many people ever stop to think about their way? Now, where's this going to lead me? What's this going to end up in? What's going to happen to me down the road? But if you're prudent, then your wisdom is an understanding your way. But the folly of fools, they're deceived by their own folly, and they go right on in their foolishness, and they never see it. They never are warned and avoid it. Fools make a mock at sin. You know, they say, it's good for your marriage to have an affair. They're a fool. Well, there are times it's better to tell little white lies. They're a fool. You know, there's a time when you ought to hold back your tithe if you're not sure about the leadership. That they're fools. You can stop and think about how many other ways fools make a mock at sin. Well, you know, it's too hard to keep all those tithes. They're a fool. Sin not to. Among the righteous there is favor. So you know that too, that people look up to and have favor of people and respect of people are people who live in righteousness. All God's commandments, not sinners, cheats and frauds and hypocrites. The heart knows the bitterness of his soul, and a stranger doesn't intermeddle with his joy. Just saying, you know, that when you have bitterness of soul, you'll understand why. You'll be able to say, this happened and that happened, or I lost this, or A stranger won't intermeddle with the joy of someone that has a wise heart that knows the reason for their own bitterness. Then a stranger can't come along and intermeddle with your joy or with your understanding of your reason for bitterness and then joy later. The house of the wicked is going to be overthrown, but the tabernacle of the upright is going to flourish. Here's the famous one we've all memorized. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Even in laughter, the heart's sorrowful, and the end of that mirth is heaviness. Now that's long and deep when you think about it a lot. A lot of times when people are sad or heavy or sorrowful, they want to go to the movie or get with people that they can get mixed up in laughter. But even in a lot of laughter, down deep inside, there's still deep sorrow, and it's just being covered over or erased by that laughter. In the years I've been in the ministry, there are a couple of couples I've always thought of. I thought, well, boy, those are the ideal couple. Talk about happy and bubbly and effervescent, and the most bubbly, effervescent, happy, happy, laugh people outwardly I've ever known. Later on, you know, they're gone, broken up. And it wasn't genuine. It wasn't real. It wasn't natural. It wasn't always there. It was just that cover over. It's like he's saying here. I think that's what he's meaning here. A lot of people try to cover over their real feelings inside by this outward show of laughter. And the end of that kind of mirth is heaviness. You can't laugh it away. It's going to come back on you. The backslider in heart is going to be filled with his own ways. A good man's going to be satisfied with himself. So you're not going to be happy when. I'll be happy when I get here, when I own this, or when I... No. That all comes... You're either a happy person or you're not. You know, if you're a negative, sarcastic, sourpuss, then... You're just going to have to change it, that's all. You can't say, I'll be happy when. Because where you are and the things you have, that isn't what's going to change your very nature, your very being. But the backslider in heart's filled with his own ways, but the good man satisfied from himself. The simple, they believe everything. They believe every word, they believe everybody, they believe... Like we read back in Proverbs about the woman with her false lips, and they believe anything. But not anybody that's prudent. They're going to weigh things and think things through, and they're going to look well to his doing and his going. A wise man fears and departs from evil. But the fool rages and is confident. How many times have you seen that fulfilled? Wise men see trouble ahead and avoid it. If you have the fear of God, you're afraid to do what God says not to do. So if you have wisdom, you're going to be afraid to go the way of evil. You're going to be departing from evil. You run from it. You avoid it. You're not a fool. The first fool's confident. He really thinks he knows how to have real life. And then when he tries what he wants to try and he comes to paying the penalty, he rages, gets mad, and blames anybody and everybody and God, and that he never learns. He goes right on after that, confident in his foolishness, and then when he pays the penalty, he rages. Verse 17, he that is soon angry, good title words to circle, soon angry, deals foolish. They've proven scientifically, when you get real angry, you do see red. It affects your vision. So anybody that's soon angry, don't try to do any dealing with somebody when they're hotheads, when they're explosive people with a blow-up nature. They'll deal foolishly. A man of wicked devices is hated. People just dislike a liar, cheater, crook, fraud. The simple inherit folly. Because, as he said in verse 15, they just believe anything and everything, and then what do you pay? You're going to inherit folly. But if you're prudent, then you're crowned with knowledge. The evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. So sooner or later, in the resurrection, or even in this life, the man that owns this house behind us back here, the evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Now, the poor is hated even of his own neighbor. The word hated here and despised are misleading because they don't really mean that in modern day language. The poor it catered to are esteemed highly or respected and impressive. The poor people just disregard them. They don't pay any special note to them. Not that they hate them, but by not promoting them or helping them, or it's hatred in comparison. So even the neighbor of someone that's poor doesn't take note of them, doesn't regard them, doesn't esteem him very highly. But boy, the rich guys, everybody caters. Many are the lovers of the rich, what the Hebrew literally says. Many are the lovers of the rich. You know, James said that in the New Testament. A man comes in with a ring on his finger and goodly clothes, and you say, here, sit up here in front. Let me get you a cushion. How about a cold water, you know? The rich has many friends. He that despises his neighbor sins. Now, there again, it doesn't necessarily mean despise in the sense we take it. It can mean regard lightly. It's actually what Christ referred to. In Greek, it would say, says reka, or vain fellow, or, you know, you esteem them lightly. You don't regard them very highly. They're just low class in your attitude. So if you classify people and put neighbors down as low class, or, you know, they're all made in God's image, no matter how rich or poor, or no matter how ignorant or untrained or unskilled, you can't get away with despising your neighbor. That's sin. They're all potential gods, you know. He that has mercy on the poor, he's going to be happy. Because God's going to reward and bless and benefit someone like that. Do they not err that devise evil? But mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good. Here again, Mr. Armstrong was talking the other day about the Bible term for heart, and it, in many cases, is talking about your intent, your motive, your attitude. You know, what is your motive for serving? What's your motive for showing kindness? Trying to advance yourself? You're trying to... You got a greedy motive? You got a vengeful motive? In the refresher class, Mr. Koch mentions on one of the first day, he talks about modern management principles, accomplishment, and success. And he said, God's more interested in your motives, your attitude, your heart, than your talents. God's Spirit can give you talents, but you don't even have any. Mercy and truth are to those that devise good. In all labor there's profit, but the talk of the lips tends only to penury. What can talk from lips produce overall, in general? Waste time, spread error. But in all labor there's profit, no matter whether you're digging or raking or washing or whatever. In all labor there's profit. But people just stand around and yak and talk. The crown of the wise is their riches. That the foolishness of fools is folly. A true witness delivers souls, but a deceitful witness speaks lies. Back in verse 16, we had a red hexagon on the fear of God, if you're jotting down some of the markings on there. verse 1, you have a verse just Wyatt written across the verse. The thief of the tongue in verse 3, and then come back to verse 26, another red hexagon, the fear of God. In the fear of the eternal is strong confidence. The Bible is just full of instruction about fearing God and fearing the Scriptures, trembling at the Word. And that's the way you avoid reasoning and intellectual vanity. And in the fear of the eternal is strong confidence. If you just never reasoned with God, if you always just took what God said, you believe God. You don't just believe in God or believe on God, but you literally believe God. So then you can have strong confidence, not worry, not insecurity, not fear. If you fear the eternal, then you can have strong confidence. Now, what if you have the fear of the eternal as a dad or a mom? His children shall have a place of refuge. Because they're going to have that reverence for God too. They're going to grow up in the fear of God. That's why, you know, when it says, if you train up your children in the fear of God, then they're going to be stable and protected. The fear of the eternal is the fountain of life, to depart from the snares of death. You're just afraid to reason with God, and afraid to argue with God, and afraid to seek your own will, and afraid to doubt or second-guess Scripture. Then you'll have a fountain of life. And your children will have a place of refuge. You have strong confidence. You don't have to worry about the snares of death. In the multitude of people is the king's honor. The more people that look up to him and follow him and listen to him, then that's his strength. That's his honor. But if they're out to get him, they'll assassinate him and he won't be able to stand. But in the want of people, he doesn't have their honor, but instead taxes them heavily or abuses them or is crooked and greedy and getting for himself. In the end, that's going to be the destruction of that friend. Here's another good verse on temper, like we read earlier. He that is slow to wrath. Call your attention again. God says, be you angry. 1 Thessalonians 4, and he says, sin not. Or is it 5? I think it's 1 Thessalonians 5. But he says, be you angry, but don't sin. Now I'm curious about where that is. It's the Ephesians. Okay, Ephesians 4:26. Be you angry and sin not. You know, we've had in our day representation of saintly Christianity, and they ever forget the first real television ministry of Bishop Sheen. You know, he was always just goody-goody, just suave, just oily, and just nicey-nice, you know. And he was trying to picture God that way. And when you read the true story of Christ, boy, there are Christian books galore that apologize for Christ. It influences men. I had a class in Big Sandy, third year speech, and I had this student stand up to read Matthew 23. And he read it, you know, and I just about passed out, you know. He said, woe unto you. You know, I just thought, I can't believe that, you know. Where's this guy been, you know? What? Here he was, a junior, and he really felt that's the way Jesus said that. And, you know, I wonder what he thought when he grabbed that quirt and drove those out and get out of the sheep. You know, that's just ridiculous. But we get that idea about God, you know. We think God is a pansy and a kind of a goody-goody. God would never get upset, but, you know, Christ got angry. I mean, he was angry. He was angry a number of times, but he never did sin anything. And it's significant to me when you read where Christ got provoked. The very next incident recorded was the tender. The epilogue. Yeah, someone come along there, the little sick child, and see what he'd do. Well, God tested him, and he never did get angry to the degree of sin, but he got angry. So God doesn't say, don't ever get wrathful, don't ever get angry. You've got to have anger wrong, and anger at sin, and anger at evil. But you have to be slow to wrath. So if you're slow to wrath, you have great understanding. So you don't ever get worked up at anything. We've got attack speeches in the spokesman's club, you know, to get people to get worked up at things. But some guys are so mild-mannered they couldn't get worked up at anything. You know? They can see all kinds of corruption right under their nose and they can't even get worked up. Well, that's bad, you know. So God never does say, he that's totally vacuum from anger, you know, he's slow to anger, slow to wrath, is a great understanding. But he that is hasty of spirit exalts folly. He's going to produce plenty of it. He's going to participate in a lot of it. He's going to make a big mountain of it. That's what you're going to do when you're hasty of spirit. The sound heart is the life of the flesh. But envy, the rottenness of the bones. So if you want to know why God says sin is sin, why is it sin to envy? Because it affects your health. It'll cause your inward beings to react as if you didn't have the red marrow in the bones, as if you're having a cancer. Envy will do that to you. A sound heart, though, gives life to the flesh. Now, if you oppress the poor, you reproach your maker. God made him in his image. He's a potential member of God's family. So, don't ever despise the poor neighbor, or don't ever class yourself aloof. You know, that's one of the great sins in the Bible. Most people don't even know it's there. You see people all the time who walk around better than everybody else. Upper crust, upper class, highbrow. You think only Hindus have caste system? They have the extreme of it. He that oppresses the poor reproaches his maker. So be careful about always thinking there might be a curse that causes the poor to be poor. Might not be so. It might be hereditary. It might be not his own fault. It might be corruption and crookedness. He that oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he that honors him has mercy on the poor. The wicked is driven away in his wickedness, but the righteous has hope in his death. He'll be resurrected and live forever. So really, he taught about the end of mankind without the hope of God, ending with the grave. But people that live God's way, there was hope beyond the grave. Wisdom rests in the heart of him that has understanding. So they're all tied together. You know, you have wisdom and understanding, they work together. That which is in the midst of fools is made them. It'll come out in a hurry. They're not, by being a fool, they can't cover it up. By being a fool, they proclaim their folly. Righteousness exalts a nation. Sins are reproached to any people. The king's favor is toward a wise servant, but his wrath is against him that causes shame. Of course, you can see that in Esther, the story there, and how the king gave favor to Mordecai, who was a wise servant. How the king gave favor to Joseph and his wisdom in managing the affairs of Egypt. But the wrath of the king is going to be against anybody that he puts in a position that brings shame back on the king.